Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Today we're lucky to have not one, but two great guests. The first one is Tom Black. He's the reigning MVP of our show, and he's the head coach at Georgia University. And we're also joined by one of my all-time favorite guests and the Miami Dolphins tight ends coach, Shane Day. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
So Tom had mentioned to me that you guys often Skype and discuss coaching stuff. So I'm wondering how often you guys do this and what's the value in it, and can I be a fly on the wall for the next one?
We do it as often as Shane lets me bug him. I usually text him about three times a week, and on the third time he'll succumb and let me talk to him for about an hour. And then it's been great. Feel like most of the time we talk about motor learning or culture lately, and at least for me it's been great. I think for him it's a nice thing for him to do for me, but I learned a ton, and it's just really good to bounce something off someone you respect who's so good at what he does. And so for me it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's been a really fun process. I mean, we're doing it about once a week or once every 2 weeks, and I've learned a lot. It's been a really good process that we've had.
That sounds really cool. I am definitely jealous, and hopefully we can recreate some of that magic here.
I don't know if you want to.
Well, yeah, I think we do.
Okay.
So our topic for today is, how do we actually apply all this great stuff we've learned about and heard about, stuff like motor learning, growth mindset, and more. So kind of to start with motor learning, there's this term game-like that I hear thrown around a lot, and I see people use it in different ways. So can you guys maybe just start out by defining it and give us some examples of what it looks like in reality?
You want to go first, Shane, or you want me to?
Sure, I can go first. Okay. I think game-like to me just means that you're trying to make your practice simulate the game as closely as possible. So any kind of, like in my case, any kind of drills that we have, we want it to be exactly like the game, or at least as close as possible. So that's what we're trying to do. And that's what we try to do, at least on my end, on all of the drills that we do. So we definitely talk about that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much right on. I mean, I just kind of cringed when you asked that, because I'm thinking about one of the last Skypes Shane and I had with Steve Bain, who knows a lot more about this than any of us.
Yeah.
And we were trying to pick his brain on dynamical systems and transfer and how game-like is game-like. And Steve was kind of grabbing his hair in frustration. So, like, if he feels that way trying to explain it to us, it's kind of intimidating thinking how we're going to explain it. But, I agree with Shane. It's game-like is game-like. I think I can't speak for Steve, but I think he would say it's the same internal energy systems you would use in a game. It's the same perception you would see and experience in a game, and it's the same choices you would make in a game. I don't know. Do you think that's about right, Shane?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The same context, the same pressure.
Whoa, exactly right. Hey, this is recorded, right? Awesome.
Exactly.
Is that not how it normally goes?
Yeah,
pretty Shane
much.
Says I'm right? Or
yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
What is internal energy systems? What does that mean?
I think Shane can explain that better than me, because I think he understands that better.
So, yeah, we've been talking, one of the main subjects we've been talking about the last couple of months is like complex biological systems or ecological systems, and how basically everything that you do in practice is not going to transfer unless, you know, you take all those variables into account. So, like, you have the psychological performance, you have the physical, the physiological, the motor learning aspects, and you kind of have to take all of those into account. Otherwise, you're not going to have complete transfer. So that was one of the big conversations we had with Steve Bain on, was, you know, all those different factors, because it gets pretty complex pretty fast.
Yeah.
And trying to manage all those variables in a practice situation, or even trying to organize a practice to take those into consideration, we've learned a lot by talking to him, because it's just a very complex system.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing I've taken from it, again, Shane, jump in if I'm saying this wrong, but so I think if we go by like schema theory, what, you know, Dr. Schmidt taught, and, you know, what we understand of random and variable practice, I think that's a really good really good working model. That'll create some really good practice conditions. But it seems like with dynamical systems, that's not completely correct, where there's not this ultimate motor program that you store in your brain and you start applying to all these random situations. Instead, there's just kind of what we said before. There's your perception of the skill in that very moment and the response you choose to do. So like one thing Steve Bain told us was, you know, there's not enough brains in the world to store every specific motor pattern for every specific situation. So when you think of it that way, and I might be saying it more complicated than I probably am than it needs to be, but when you think about it that way, you just understand how specific things actually are and how important it is for the player to be in just 5,000 situations in practice and try to apply a similar solution. So basically, you know, the straight and simple platform or the four-step approach, to try to apply that solution to the 1,000 different situations in the game, which is going to create 1,000 different slightly different solutions to the slightly different solutions to the same approach or to the same platform. So, and I don't know if, I hope I'm making sense, but when you think of it that way, you can understand how specific things are and how important it is to be game-like and to put the athlete in situations where they can find all these novel different solutions. So I don't know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm curious, what are some of the ways you think people maybe hear this information and then misuse it or I don't want to say abuse it, but like they feel like they're practicing game-like, but they aren't? Where do you think some of the errors are there?
Shane, you go.
I think there's some real subtleties to all the motor learning concepts. I find like when I have conversations with people, it seems really clear. And then I'll go watch them try to execute those in a practice situation. Yeah. And sometimes you see that they're misapplied because they are subtle. Like the theories on paper, you know, they sound pretty easy to follow and all that stuff. But then when you see how it plays out, a lot of times they may be in line with one motor learning principle, but they may be violating two or three others. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard unless I'm watching people practice to actually see how it all plays out. So
can you think of some ways where you guys have maybe misused it or misunderstood it?
Never, John. I understand it so perfectly.
I just thought of five right now.
Me and Franz Bosch and Bernstein are just right there together. I think that first is the point. I mean, I'm a poli-sci major who's been, you know, I don't even know if I've been coaching 20 years yet. I have a long way to go. So I'm victim number one in terms of misapplying things and trying to figure it out and get better. So I think that's an important message because we're all messing it up and trying to figure it out and get better. But I think in terms of misapplying it, I mean, I think the biggest trap is a couple of traps. I mean, trying to make practice perfect, you know, trying to get perfect reps, that's going to lead you to probably want to start blocking drills or getting out of game like conditions pretty quickly. Shane could step into that also. And I think another trap, I think that's my main one. I lost my train of thought for a second. Can you think of other, Shane?
Yeah. I mean, I think the other big one is, you know, part whole, which I know you want to make everything as whole as possible and you want to have limited progressions. But I think a lot of times people get kind of lost in that because there is a little bit of a progression, especially at the beginning when you're first teaching a skill. And yeah, I know I lose sight of that sometimes. I mean, I can look back on several times in my career. I'm obviously still a work in progress, like Tom was mentioning too, because I've made all these mistakes that we're talking about hundreds of times. And even once in a while, I'll find myself now saying, hey, is this too much of a progression? How quickly can I get to a game-like situation? Like, how quickly is that? And you're also always kind of managing the confidence of the athlete.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's always an issue. Like, you know, Tom and I had a conversation last year and we were talking about, like, sometimes you'll get athletes that have been taught a certain way. And so when you go into game-like training, like, they haven't been taught that way. So they have no confidence and
it's overwhelming
quickly. Yeah, it becomes overwhelming quickly. And so then you're kind of managing that. You have to manage the confidence of the athlete and try to get them caught up with the rest of the athletes in the progression or the way that you're trying to teach stuff. So that comes up all the time for me, especially at the beginning.
Those are my follow-up questions down the road. You're taking them. Dang it.
Sorry.
Yes, Shane, I was going to ask about that. Like one of the big resistances as athletes we have is that you know, block training feels so good. I can get in a rhythm and a groove. Is there any value in kind of doing some blocked before competition to build that confidence, or is it just false confidence?
Yeah, it's just false confidence. But
I agree.
The issue is, like, especially like in my particular room now, like we turn over guys a lot. So like the guys that have been with me for a year or 2 years or for at least a little while, they understand the whole process. And when we get new athletes that haven't been accustomed to that and they're used to, man, I had a couple this year that they really want to feel good about what they're doing. Yeah. And so when they're messing up, they're really self-conscious and they don't want to let the team down and they don't want to let the coach down. And so you're spending a lot of time just to explain to them, no, it's okay. Like, this is part of growth. You want to make mistakes. You've got to try. And we want to make it as hard as possible so that it transfers. But that, when you get a new person that's not acclimated to that, it just takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of getting them up to speed with the rest of the guys. But I really don't think there's any value in that. And I think the longer it takes for you to cut the cord on that, the worse off you are, because it just gets played out longer and longer and longer. Just do it right away and then explain to them the mindset, hey, it's okay. You're going to make mistakes. I'll take them early on. Just give it your best effort and keep trying, and we're going to make it really hard on you. But in the long run, you're going to make a lot better gains, a lot quicker.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with, I mean, if you're starting a match and you need to warm up and you're doing some block practice because you have 5 minutes and you got to get a sweat going, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think if you feel like you need those block reps or you can't perform, then, you know, I think that's a problem. Now, I don't know if you're kind of making that distinction, Shane.
Yeah, I think it does quickly become a crutch.
Right.
Like, I agree with what Tom's saying. Like, that's been my, like, they think they need that. And if they don't have it, they're not going to be successful. And in my mind, you really want to build a resilient mindset that no matter what the conditions are, they can perform. And so there's a balance, like Tom's. Like, when you're warming up, you're warming up. You can do a lot of things to warm up. So, and I think that's fine.
So then how do you adapt when you're working with someone who's came from that blocked practice structure? Are you doing like little tutorials, like giving them some motor learning background? Or is it like more in the practice setting, like, this is what game like feels like? What does it look like, I guess, when you're trying to adapt those players?
Yeah, so sometimes I'll give them a little bit of a heads up if they're new to it, but a lot of times I just throw them in, and it really depends on the individual, because a lot of guys, they'll just respond to whatever you're doing, and it won't bother them that much. And other people, you can tell right away that they're really stressed out, and then when that occurs, that's kind of when I'll have the side conversations. The way that our structure is set up in the National Football League is we don't have a lot of time, the meeting times are very limited. And so we kind of have to teach to the fastest learners. And then, like I said, I'll have side conversations on the way to the field or during stretch or when we're eating breakfast or whatever, just to let them know, you know, what we're trying to do. And I try really hard to like really build good relationships with the guys so that they, at least initially, and as we develop it, they get trust in what I'm doing. And even if they don't trust it in the moment, they're like, okay, this guy, you know, he's on my same page. He's trying to help me become the best player I can be. And so they kind of give me some leniency there as far as getting through it. And then when I can see they're really stressed out, I'll have a direct conversation, say, look, you know, just what we just said a second ago. Hey, this is growth mindset. This is what's going to happen. And don't worry about it. You know, just try to take the pressure off them, because the most difficult thing, especially in team settings, is they don't want to, especially like veteran players, they don't want to look bad in front of their teammates. And if you're asking them to do a new technique that they're not familiar with, I mean, that's part of the process. They're going to look bad. And so I just try to take that stress off by saying, hey, just, it's on me. If you mess up, it's on me. And I'll take it until they're at a point where they can kind of at least develop some sort of competency in that new technique.
Yeah. And I feel like that trust is really important. I can picture in my career, like indoor playing with like a coach right behind me and just like thinking like if I'm shanking balls or whatever, like he's judging me, versus like, no, trust that it can be tough and that's how I'm gonna get better, rather than like hoping that server serves easy so I look good in that drill or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I think you hit that on the head. I mean, like one thing, I mean, I think what we're talking about is how do we challenge our players with an appropriate task while having a relationship that allows them to get after that, right? You know, I mean, it's
yes.
If the task is challenging and the relationship's bad, I don't feel safe around my coach. I feel like I'm getting judged. It's really hard for me to get after it because I'm thinking about this critical environment I'm under, right? And if the task is low and the relationship's really strong, then I'm going to feel great about my coach and I'm going to be really happy and stuff, but I'm not going to be getting much better. So, I mean, I getting a little sideways, but I mean, my impression of the 1950s and 60s, you know, like we have, like, it just seems like there's this task, and the relationship, like, you know, forget about the relationship. It's going to be whatever the coach says, just deal with it. And we've kind of gone in this era where it's like all relationship now, you know, and that, you know, the task, it's like, well, it seems like the task doesn't matter as much as the relationship, but I think it's both. I think you need a challenging task, which is where the motor learning comes in. How do we create this challenging task that's really going to help you grow? And then how do I create this relationship with you, you know, that we can get better together, that you really feel like you can get after it, you know, that we can get into this journey together? I think that's where coaching really gets hard, when you can really marry those two things. And, but yeah, I hope that's not too much of a sideways talk, but I think that's what I'm like. When I see Shane coach, I see a guy who's really working hard to make a safe environment, to let the guys know, like, you know, it's not just okay to make mistakes. Like, we have to make these mistakes to get to the end point, you know? And then once we get to the end point, there'll be another end point. We'll make more mistakes to get there, and that's okay. That's the way it's supposed to be. We're fired up about that. And I think because the guys know he really means that, and because he celebrates that, they can let it rip and they can get on to these really challenging tasks. So when I see him coach, I see a guy who's really doing both. And, you know, and I think that's when coaching gets, you know, really, really hard. I think coaching is always hard, but to me, that's what I aspire for, you know, to try to be really good on those two levels. And, you know, obviously got a long way to go, but that's the deal.
And I think that might be kind of an answer to this question, but if you guys think of any other examples, talking about growth mindset specifically, let's say you get your players to read the book. It's a pretty simple concept. They get it. But where do you go from there? Like, how do you incorporate it into practice and into, I guess, everyday life?
Yeah, that's the hard part, because like the book is the easy part. Like, you read the concept and you're like, oh yeah, no duh. You can't have a fixed mindset and get better, and you're going to protect your ego and all that stuff. But how it plays out in a real situation, a real life situation, I think is a lot trickier and depends a lot on the individual. You know, where they're at on that spectrum of, I mean, everybody's, you know, somewhere on that spectrum. They're not either growth or fixed. They have aspects of right. both. And depending on how, you know, what environment they're coming from, I mean, that has a big influence on it too. But I think it's really tricky. It's not as easy as just presenting, here's growth mindset, it's okay to make mistakes. Like, it's a continual process that you have to continue to work with individual athletes. And they all are some are more open than others to that thought process, depending on their own experiences.
John, I think I heard you. Have you guys read Culture Code? Are you guys right in the middle of it?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through it.
Yeah, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's awesome. I want to hear more about Popovich, like that, the stuff with that was, I thought that was really powerful. Like, hearing him talk after, I think the Spurs lost, what was it, game six? And
yeah,
I don't know, after tough losses, like his first reaction, like the next day at practice, is just to check in with the guys. And it was like no basketball stuff. It was just, I'm here for you. You know, how you feeling? Like, that sort of stuff was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that book just knocks it out of the park. I know Shane really loved it too. And, you know, I think he had that good formula of safety, you know, vulnerability, then you can get to the challenge. And like, one thing I really struggle with is the vulnerability part. Like, I'm really trying to push myself there to get better, because I do mess up all the time and I'm always making mistakes, and I need to be better about verbalizing that and letting the players know that I know that. Cause if they can see that I'm messing up too, and I'm trying to figure this out, then the room can relax and they can get a lot better. And, you know, I just don't do that stuff enough. So that's just an example of, I completely embrace the growth mindset concept and I'm trying to do it every day, but there's several ingredients of it that if I don't get better at it, it's not going to be a strong enough culture, you know, in the gym. So I think that's when it gets hard, just trying to analyze, you know, how that growth mindset is actually working within you on a day-to-day basis. Cause I can see where I'm still fixed and I need to become more growth. And, yeah, but I think that's the exciting part too. You know, it never ends. It's a lifelong process, but, it's really, really hard. I mean, there's lots and lots of levels to go with it.
And Tom, when you're talking about, I guess, examples of vulnerability and how you are fixed or, you know, whatever, is that from your daily life you're saying this is where I messed up, or is it actual, like, coaching mistakes you're making that you're sharing with the team?
Both, all of it. You know, I mean, in between the task and the relationship, I think we're all different. You know, for me as a coach, I can – my default is to get really heavy on the task. Like, hey, this is what we're working on. Let's get going. And I can skip the relationship part. You know, I mean, there's times where I I know I made a mistake, or I didn't say things correctly, or I didn't pay enough attention to someone, and I'll just kind of gloss over it because we got to get going. And this kid knows, you know, they know where I'm at, they know what I mean, but they don't. You know, I need to attend to that relationship first. So, you know, so that's my challenge, but it's a good process. You know, when I slow down and say, hey, I messed that up, or hey, this is what I meant, I think I upset you here, or I didn't say this right. I can see them relax, you know, and I can see our relationship get better, and I can see the learning start to improve. So I think, you know, that's what I mean by it, but that's going to happen in my house with my wife. You know, I mess that stuff up all the time, or with my kids, you know, it's a day-to-day thing, which is what it's supposed to be. You know, we're trying to teach a mindset that's going to help everything.
What do you guys do with athletes who come in who, you know, been in different programs and maybe a very result oriented, program, and for sure our culture is very result oriented. So I'm wondering, I'm guessing it takes a while to break through. Is it that you're just, you know, consistently sending the same message, or you're trying to like kind of attack it in different methods, or what have you guys found to help like break through with these people, these kind of like deeply rooted fixed mindset issues?
There's no one in the NFL like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know that there's a strict formula for it. Like, my method is I just go. So like, I don't really think about it too much. I try to really, like on the last podcast, we were talking about mindfulness. I try to just be present in all the conversations and try to notice that early on. And then just, well, I think the word you mentioned that's really important is consistency. You know, if you're consistently always focused on the process and you're not validating the outcomes, even when you're under fire, right? Because the good thing in the NFL is like, it is very outcome driven. Like you have to win games or you're fired, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of coaches are like that. So when other people are saying it's outcome, and you're still saying, no, it's not, it's process. And as long as you don't give into that temptation to go to the outcome side, I think as long as you're consistent, they start to figure it out. And I think that just develops naturally over time, because initially in the relationship, they're not going to trust you. They're going to hear what you're saying. They're going to say, I've heard this 1,000 times. I've seen 27,000 PowerPoints. It's not outcomes, it's process. And then, you know, the first thing that goes wrong, a coach is screaming and yelling at him and saying, you're an idiot because you didn't do this. And so you just have to be consistent with it. And eventually through enough repetitions, enough time together, you know, they start to develop, okay, this guy's for real. He really does mean process. It's not like I've heard from everybody else that they're just giving it lip service. He really means it. So that's been my kind of experience. And then kind of like you mentioned, like there's a million different ways to do it. And it just depends on the athlete. I try to just pay attention to how they're receiving the message. And if it doesn't work, I go to the next thing and the next thing. And I just try to be consistent with the message.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you on that, Shane.
Okay.
Especially at that level of the NFL, have you had some experiences where the relationship came because you were improving the task? Where on, you know, where most levels of skill, like below that, you really have to get the relationship right first. But sometimes with elite players, it can work the other way sometimes.
Well, we're saying relationship, and I don't know. To me, like I find it more to what you're talking about. I'm much more task oriented. And I think of it more of connection. So yeah. Like if I'm with a player and they have an issue and I can diagnose the issue and fix the problem, then there's an immediate connection and there's an immediate buy-in. Like, hey, this guy's helping me get better. Like this is working.
Right.
And so like, I don't really, like when we say relationship, I don't really focus on trying to have a relationship with the players. It just kind of happens organically. Like, you know, if I see him, you know, I talk to him and all that stuff, but I'm trying to really, to me, it organically occurs through the task. Like, I mean, you've seen me, so you kind of know, but it's more task. Like I'm not having, in my world, I'm not having like a lot of separate conversations that aren't about football. I mean, they come up organically and I do care about my players and I want to talk about all that stuff. But if I can help them on a specific task, I think that really builds the trust a lot quicker than if I try to do it outside the context of football, you know, like, because that doesn't necessarily translate. It's like transfer that we're talking about motor learning. Like, if I can care about you like as a person and your family and all that stuff, it doesn't necessarily mean that I can help you become a better football player. So I always kind of start with the football, and I do care about all that other stuff as well. Like I care about my players on every level as a person and as an athlete and everything else. And I just try to show that by being present. But my first opportunity to do that is through football. Mm-hmm. And And that's where I try to go. I don't try to do it outside the framework of just naturally, organically running into them or talking to them and just checking in to see how they're doing. And I try to focus most of it on football, like in the context of teaching something or a skill or a fundamental.
Shane, what if you have the appropriate task and, you know, you think it's good stuff, but it's really uncomfortable for them and it's making them worse in the short term? What about in that scenario?
Yeah, I had that scenario all year with a couple of players. I had a couple different players that were veteran players that had played in the NFL for over 10 years, and they were not comfortable. And the thing that was interesting was they were very open to doing whatever I recommended. And so they wanted to change. They wanted to try new stuff. They were in a new offensive scheme, so we were asking them to do different stuff than they had done in the past. And it was a struggle for all of us. I mean, it was a long year in that regard because they're trying. They're like, "Coach, I'm trying to do what you're asking. It's just not coming." You know, and so that was very difficult. And so a lot of the time, you know, we're just talking about, you know, I'm trying to not let them get frustrated, because when you try something for multiple weeks in a row, right, and it doesn't show up in the game, they don't think they can ever get it. And so I just keep trying to say, "Hey, listen, it's going to come. Don't worry about it. It's not going to show up right away. We knew it was going to be a long-term process because you have 10 years built up of doing this skill a different way. So it's not the dominant motor pattern yet. I mean, we've got to build up strength and coordination. We've got to build up all the stuff before it's going to show up in games. And especially because football, like, games are totally different than practice. Like, the physicality of it, like practice, once you get out of training camp, like, I mean, there are a lot of non-padded practices where you're not really hitting people. And then you get in a game and guys are going full speed. It just takes a long time for that to show up. So I just try to stay really patient. And some of the stuff didn't show up for 10 weeks, you know, and it'd show up and I'd be like, "There it is. We got it." You know, and they'd be fired up. They'd be like, "Coach, I got it." And I'm like, "Yes." And then it wouldn't be there next week. And so, like, I realized, like, it's even a longer process than I thought it was going to be, which it really reaffirmed to me that, like, you don't have time to not practice game-like scenarios. Like, if it's going to take 10 weeks, we got to get as many game-like scenarios as quickly as possible so we can get that transfer up to where it shows up in the games. Because if it doesn't show up in the games, it's not helping us. But it's a struggle, you know, and their confidence goes down, and they're used to being very successful at what they do, and all of a sudden they're not being successful trying your technique, and you're saying, "Hey, keep trying it, and it's hard. I think that's a big part of why it doesn't happen, because they don't fully buy in. Because they don't see the results right away. And so they're like, "You know, I'm never going to get this." And even if they're trying hard, I think in the back of their mind, unless they're fully committed to it and they own it, I think that's a real issue. I mean, that's something that we were talking about the other day, Tom, with yeah. Adam. Like, that's a big deal.
I was just thinking that. I kind of have two parts to that. Well, I think, John, I think what you just asked, I think that's the good stuff. I mean, that's what coaching is all about. You know, so we talk about the gap. You know, here's where you're at, and then you know, maybe that's the bottom line, and then there's a line just on top of it. Here's where we want to get to by the end of practice today, and that gap in between, that's where it's uncomfortable. And, you know, our ability to get in there as a coach and a player and to do it together, that's coaching. And there's just no way that process is going to go smooth every day. There's just no way. There's going to be some ups and downs and confusion, and sometimes the coaching is going to be better than the players' learning, and sometimes the players' learning is going to be better than the coaches' teaching. But, you know, like, you just get through it together, you learn through it together. I think that's the meat of it, and that's why the task and the relationship together at the same time, you know, are so important in what coaching is all about. And at the same time, I mean, when you're talking about that, Shane, I mean, it was inspiring for me. You know, when we got on the Skype with Adam O'Neill, who's been on this podcast, I mean, just to hear you talk about how you're struggling with that player, and for Adam to give you tips, and I know how much you study this stuff, and I know how passionate you are about your players, and to see you, like, really processing what Adam was saying, and you're making notes, and I could see how you were going to coach that guy next time. And all I could think of was, like, that you and that player might have had some bad days, but that guy is so lucky you're his coach. I mean, just what a learner. You're going about it the exact same way you're asking him to go about it, and that's the deal. It's not going to be smooth every time, but you're diving in the gap and you're going to figure it out, and you guys will be better for it. So.
Yeah, I was pissed. Because the season's over. The season's over, and I really, you know, like Tom said, I really try to really connect and see it from the player's perspective. And as Adam was talking about it, I was like, he's basically saying you didn't go far enough. And I was like, damn it, he's right. You know, and but the season's over, so, you know, lesson learned. But it you know, like Tom said, I'm still making tons of mistakes every day, and I'm trying to learn. And I'm trying to narrow that gap, and we're having more of these conference calls and more conversations like this. And I think that's a big part of it too, is if you can get a group of people that are all interested in investigating all this different stuff and discovering this stuff, like you can bounce ideas off them and get different perspectives. And that's what I've taken a lot from our conversations with Tom and with Adam and with you guys right now. I mean, I'm learning a ton just right now. It's awesome.
And Shane, you said didn't go far enough. What do you mean?
Well, so what Adam was referring to was there was a particular player, and as a coach, he wasn't doing it the way that he had to do it to be successful. And so I would keep, you know, saying, hey, this isn't it. And he's like, yeah, that's not it. And what Adam suggested was, he used this analogy. He said, hey, what color is the sky outside right now? And I go, it's blue. He goes, well, I'm looking at it in California and it's green. And he's like, and here's the thing. We're both looking and we both think we're right. He's like, so if you think that what the player's doing is wrong and he thinks it's right, he's like, you need to go over to his shoes. And what I should have done is let the player fail. So I should have said, I should have gone over to his side and said, okay, let's use your technique. Let's see how it works. Right. And then he comes back and I say, did it work? And he's like, no, it didn't work. Okay, let's try it again. And it doesn't work. And then at that point, then say, okay, well, let's try this different way. Because now we both would be moving in the same direction instead of me standing over to the left and him to the right and me saying, that's not it. And him saying, yeah, that's not it. I really should have let him go completely to failing with his technique, so that he could see that it wasn't going to work. And that never happened. And when he said that, I was like, that's exactly right. Because we both, me and the player, were on the same page. We talked about how hard it was going to be. We talked about how we're going to do it. He seemed to be bought in, but I didn't give him the opportunity to come over to his side, see it from his perspective, let him fail at it. Or maybe he was successful at it. I mean, he wasn't, because it didn't work. And just let him fail until the point where he saw it as a failure, and then that created the opportunity for him to see a new way to do it and have him fully buy into it, which didn't happen. And so that's when Adam said that, I was like, that's exactly, I didn't go far enough with that. I tried to see it as a coach, but I never really stepped into his shoes and saw it from his perspective to see why it wouldn't work and to get him to see it the way it had to be, because it didn't work. I mean, we just went through all of our cut-ups and we're all disappointed with how that particular skill ended up on the film.
And if you guys do that and his way does work, do you course correct? Or, I mean, what happens then?
Well, I'm real open on technique. Like, I have a specific way in my mind of watching a lot of players. I have sort of a profile or a model in my head. But to me, like, it's more constraint-based, meaning that if the guy can perform the skill however he does it, you know, we use the term like self-organizing, like however he does it, because everybody's body is a little bit different. If he can do what I'm asking him to do, the task, and he can move like a defensive end out to the numbers, I really don't care how he does it. But I could see that the way that this player was doing it wasn't going to work because his hands were wrapping and guys were pushing him back. But yeah, I'm really open on technique. I have a series of principles just like you guys do. And I try to get, I think most 99.9% of all blocks are going to work within that context. But if a guy has a different way, because he's an outlier, maybe he has unique physical characteristics that allow him to do it in a different way, then we'll do it that way. I'm very open that way.
And Tom, I guess, how open are you? I mean, have you had situations, in my mind, you study this stuff and you're pretty, I don't know, knowledgeable about your technique and specific with your players. Are you open to kind of personal mechanics or any? In that way?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the game's going to continue to evolve, and athletes are going to continue to find new solutions. So you got to be really open to that and make sure you're looking for those, because that's where the innovations are going to come from. It's not going to come from a coach thinking about it. You know, it's going to come from a player actually doing something and people going, aha, oh, that's a better way. So I do think you have to be really, really open. But I also think human beings in general follow patterns, you know, and there's some movements that, you know, if you don't do them, it's just going to be hard to be efficient. So it kind of comes down to what Shane said, you know, is it working? Is it not? And generally there are some general movement patterns that generally are going to help, you know, 98% of the population, you know, like performing movement. So, and that's, you don't want to command the athlete there. You want to guide them there. So I think it's a combination of both. You know, if they can't perform a certain skill because the movement just isn't efficient enough, then you try to guide them to the more efficient movement. And then you also want to be open enough for those outliers to create that next play, you know, to that next play that sets the new standard. So yeah, I think it's a balance.
That was part one of our interview with Tom Black and Shane Day. Join us next week as we learn more. You can follow us on Twitter @CoachYourBrain or Facebook.com/CoachYourBrainsOut.